Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. Congressional leaders are back in the Capitol today, and one of the questions being considered by people on both sides of the aisle is the future of House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. The Texas Republican and people close to him have been dogged by a series of ethics accusations over the past year. DeLay says it's all partisan, and it all just makes him stronger. But his liberal critics, among them those in the group Campaign for America's Future, sense weakness, and they recently ran a series of ads in DeLay's own district.
Tom DeLay, he'd like to wash his hands of corruption. He'd like you to forget he's been accused of accepting a gift worth thousands from a foreign agent. He'd like you to forget that two of his close associates have been indicted for money laundering.
Tom DeLay also drew criticism as the Republicans' point man on the Schiavo case, his attempt to use legislation to prolong her life, and his subsequent criticism of the judges.
We promised the Schindler family that we will not let Terry die in vain. We will look at an arrogant, out of control, unaccountable judiciary that thumb their nose at Congress and the President when given the jurisdiction to hear this case anew and look at all the facts. We will look into that.
DeLay's own allies started to worry when the conservative Wall Street Journal ran a caustic editorial saying that Tom DeLay has odor issues, smelling just like the Beltway kind of politics he once ridiculed. Well, so what's happening to the House Majority Leader anyway? Has Tom DeLay crossed a line? Has he become more of a liability than an asset for Republicans? Or is all this just wishful thinking on the part of the Democrats? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we will be discussing this with a number of guests who are set to join us today. We're going to start with Richard Cohen. Richard is congressional correspondent for the National Journal. It's a magazine that covers politics and policy in Washington, D.C. And Rich is joining us from a studio in D.C. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you.
How much trouble is Tom DeLay really in, and how much of this is just wishful thinking on the part of the Democrats?
Well, the Democrats at this point, certainly Democrats and their allies, are certainly hoping to make the most of Tom DeLay's problems. Some of his problems are real. In particular, there's indictments that have been issued in Austin, a criminal case in Austin, Texas, that involve three close political associates, and that trial could raise additional questions about Mr. DeLay himself. Or, on the other hand, those indictments could be thrown out. So there's the uncertainty in Austin. There's also an investigation by a grand jury and by a Senate committee here in Washington looking into lobbying activities by an individual who named Jack Abramoff. And Mr. Stanton, colleague of Abramoff, and both Abramoff and Stanton over the years past have been fairly close to Mr. DeLay, although he lately has distanced himself. There could be indictments against those individuals that could affect Mr. DeLay. But I guess just to finish in response to your question, I guess the biggest question facing Mr. DeLay is whether he becomes kind of a political burden for Republicans, and that's the big unknown.
Now, he's a powerful figure within his party, and a feature that you wrote recently put you in the position of quoting a lot of people without giving their names. They didn't want to be Republicans quoted as speaking or raising any questions about the House Majority Leader. But in your work for that, Rich, did you find that there's any wearing away of support among Republicans for Tom DeLay?
I think if you're a Republican in Washington these days, your number one priority is, or at least for most of them, is President Bush's agenda. Anything that gets in the way of that or that complicates that already difficult assignment of passing Social Security and dealing with budget issues and problems in Iraq, anything that distracts from that is a problem. Right now, Tom DeLay is distracting from that. You mentioned they just come back from a two-week recess. They hope to spend. Republicans wanted to talk about Social Security. They did some of that, but they did more talking about Terry Schiavo and, as you mentioned in your setup, the Wall Street Journal editorial criticizing Tom DeLay.
Let's hear from Morton Blackwell. Morton is a member of the Republican National Committee from Virginia. He's held that post since 1988, and he's joining us on the line. Morton, thanks for your time.
Happy to be with you.
Tell me what you think of all these flies buzzing around Tom DeLay.
Well, the Democrats and the leftist interest groups are attacking Tom DeLay for just one reason. Congressman DeLay is one of the most effective fighters for conservative principles. And the only fire under all that smoke generated by the leftist attacks is their burning hatred of a good man.
Now, if you were a Democrat, you'd be aiming at this man, too, if he's that good, right?
Not me. There are plenty of issues to talk about. And frankly, it's truly outrageous what they're doing, because there has been no evidence produced whatsoever that Tom DeLay has done anything that is illegal or in violation of the House rules.
Now, I just have to go by what I read in the newspaper, but I saw 3 unanimous censures by the House Ethics Committee against this congressman, and there are the indictments that Rich Cohen just talked about. What do you mean that there's nothing against him?
There has been no evidence presented that he broke the House rules or anything that he is in a case where he has broken the law. These indictments are from Texas, or from the same leftist district attorney who just prior to an election filed indictments against Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas, and those things never came to trial because they were entirely political. This is all political, and it's all because Tom DeLay is an effective leader for conservative principles. He manages the strategy which wins for conservatives in the narrowly divided House of Representatives time and time again, and that's why they are attacking him. If he were a backbencher, he wouldn't be under attack. And the same people who attempted to create media feeding frenzies against Ronald Reagan repeatedly, who attempted to create media feeding frenzy against President Bush in his reelection campaign, are behind these attacks for Tom DeLay. And I don't think it's going to work against Tom DeLay anything more than it did against President Reagan and President Bush.
I'm wondering, Morton, if I can get your reaction to a line from the Wall Street Journal editorial. The writers there said, "Mr. DeLay, who rode to power in 1994 on a wave of revulsion at the everyday ways of big government, has become the living exemplar of some of its worst habits, betraying the broader set of principles that brought him to office." What did you make of that?
Well, I have to tell you that I am a frequent reader and a big fan of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. I don't always agree with them. I don't agree with them in this case, but even there is no suggestion that Congressman DeLay has broken the House rules or the law. Look, he is involved in every significant issue that comes before the House of Representatives. That's an enormous amount of activities. And
so you're saying it makes him a lightning rod for criticism?
Yes, and the left are not content with making mountains out of molehills. They're creating molehills to make mountains out of.
I'm interested in your own perspective of the effect of this, because you're not just an admirer of Tom DeLay, you're a friend of Tom DeLay, and there have been suggestions that this kind of stuff is wearing him down. If it's not wearing him down, it's certainly distracting him from the legislative agenda that he's there to manage. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I don't think it is wearing him down. I don't speak with him often. I've spoken with him a couple of times since this repetitive media attack began, and he doesn't seem to me in any way being worn down. He is focusing on legislative matters.
You just called it a media attack.
Yeah. Look, major newspapers have run the same story maybe a dozen times with different headlines, various allegations, no new information, and now they have the gall to say that Congressman DeLay is controversial. This is a manufactured thing, manufactured because he's an effective conservative leader.
Rich Cohen with the National Journal. It's your job to see through the politics and figure out what's reportable and what's not. Is this a media manufactured thing in your view?
Well, it's I'll dance around with you a bit. First of all, I'll make one small correction of something you said, Dick. He was not censured by the House. The House Ethics, and this is Washington gibberish, perhaps, but
no,
it makes
important.
A difference. The House Ethics Committee unanimously last September issued 3 admonishments, which fall short of censure or even reprimand. There's something in the nature of wrist slap, and Mr. DeLay and his lawyers at the time said that these admonishments did not indicate or claim that he actually violated any House rule. I think, and I guess I'd make another point about the media aspect of this. There have been a number of media stories in newspapers and magazines about problems in the recent weeks, but to some extent, Mr. Blackwell makes a valid point that a lot of these charges, while they may be important, they may be valid, may not be valid, they've been out there for months, and as with the admonishments in September or the indictment in Austin that I talked about earlier that also came down in September, there has been some churning, some kind of some groups and some editorials, the Wall Street Journal you mentioned earlier.
I need to stop you there, Rich. We're going to come back and continue this afterwards. Morton Blackwell, thank you for your time on the program.
Thank you.
Morton Blackwell, member of the Republican National Committee. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. What do you make of the fuss over Tom DeLay? Is it just churning? How does it make you feel? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Well, there have been charges and accusations made about House Majority Leader Tom DeLay since the House Ethics Committee issued its admonishments in September. And we're taking the temperature of Congress as the leaders come back into Washington. Tom DeLay, of course, drew a lot of attention to himself when he put himself out as the point person for the Schiavo reaction. That's another thing which has attracted attention to him. We're testing the waters here and seeing whether or not there is any weakening of Republican support for someone who has been such a strong advocate for that legislative agenda. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Rich Cohen is with us. He's congressional correspondent for the National Journal. We're going to bring Lou DeBose in now. Lou is a columnist for the Texas Observer and author of a book called The Hammer, Tom DeLay, God, Money, and the Rise of the Republican Congress. Lou is joining us from the NPR studio in Austin. Lou, nice of you to be with us.
Glad to be with you.
What are the people in Texas saying about this right now? Is it getting a lot of attention?
Yeah, I mean, Tom DeLay's a big story in Texas. He you know, came into the state a year ago and redrew the district lines, picked up 6 in a sort of ham-handed manner, really, and said, "I'm the majority leader, and I want to do it. I need the seats." Forced the state house to redraw the district lines. Our governor was in, and to the effect that it picked up 6 congressmen in Washington for the Republicans from Texas. You know, our governor, Rick Perry, was in Washington ringing the bell at the stock exchange the day that Tom DeLay was here, sitting the Republicans down and ironing out the differences among the Republicans in the Senate and the House on this, on the redistricting bill. The big story, though, here is the indictments. 3 indictments, felony indictments of the officials who set up Tom DeLay's trim pack in Texas. And as Juliet Alperin reported in the Washington Post when the story broke a year ago, they DeLay and Jim Ellis drove around the state and said, "This is what we're going to do. We're going to raise this money in Texas. We're going to do. We're going to raise corporate money and non-corporate money." Well, it's against the law to spend corporate money on an election in Texas, and they spent $1.5 million on 17 races. They had to capture. They, being the DeLay and the Republicans, had to capture the state house in order to. From the Democrats in order to make the redistricting plan work. So they spent $1.5 million, half of which was not declared to the Texas Ethics Commission and was corporate money. The result is 3 indictments of Tom DeLay's fundraisers and his political operative here in Texas, and 8 corporations are indicted. You know, here we have a lawyer, Mr. Blackwell's description notwithstanding, He's prosecuted 15 public officials, the DA in Travis County here in Austin. He's prosecuted 15 elected officials. 12 of those 15 have been Democrats. The last successful prosecution was a Democratic Speaker of the House here in Texas. So, not, you know, a left-wing partisan, well, not hardly, as we say here in Texas.
Lou, what about recent polls showing a slip in support for Tom DeLay? Any substance to that, or are they a pretty small shift in numbers at this point?
Well, it was a surprise to me because Tom DeLay has always run particularly well in his district. I mean, he's the majority leader. He is a high-profile politician. He used to attend church in the heart of his district and was home on Sundays. And to see him drawing 49%, 52% of people who say they will vote for him, and to see 49% saying they won't. For an incumbent who's been there since 1984, I think it suggests that he's in real trouble.
Whit Ayers is a president of a Republican polling firm that bears his name, Ayers and McHenry Associates in Alexandria, Virginia. He's been listening along on the phone, and Whit, it's probably a good time to bring you into the conversation. Nice to have you back with us.
Dick, good to be back with you. As a North Carolina graduate, I'll try to think about something other than basketball for just a few minutes.
Just sorry to distract you with this, but... You're a veteran of Beltway politics and the difference between what's real and what's not. When you add up the indictments and the admonishments from the ethics committee and all the other things, the cans that are being tied to Tom DeLay, what do you make of all that?
Well, a couple of points. First of all, there are only two constituencies that really matter to Tom DeLay. The first is the one you were just talking about. That is the views of the voters in the 22nd District in Texas. But the other one is the views of the House Republican Caucus here in Washington. And at least at this point, there is no evidence of any slippage of support among House Republican members here in Washington. Indeed, attacks by the left, attacks by the press on a Republican leader can sometimes have the effect of shoring up support for Republican leaders among House Republicans. So it's important to keep your eye on the ball about what constituencies matter, and what the left thinks and what the press thinks doesn't matter a whole lot.
All right, but if there were members of the GOP caucus who were starting to have second thoughts, you think we'd know about that at this point?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but at least I haven't seen any evidence of that. The second point, Dick, to keep in mind is to keep this whole thing in perspective nationally. Tom DeLay is a household name in the Washington Beltway, probably among connection listeners, but he's hardly a household name nationally. Almost everybody in the country has an opinion about George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. About 90% of Americans have an opinion about Dick Cheney and Laura Bush and Donald Rumsfeld. By contrast, only about half of Americans have an opinion about Tom DeLay. And at least the latest numbers, this was before the Schiavo case, the latest numbers showed Tom DeLay with a net favorable rating. These are Gallup data, 29 favorable, 24 unfavorable. Contrast that with Howard Dean, whom a lot more people know as the very visible spokesman for the Democratic Party as the head of the Democratic National Committee. He had a net unfavorable rating of 31 favorable, 38 unfavorable. So at least at that point, Tom DeLay was significantly more popular than Howard Dean. And I think it helps to keep that in perspective when we're talking about the national implications of this story.
All right, let's hear from some of our listeners. Do you know Tom DeLay? And what do you know about Tom DeLay? Do you think that this person is someone who is going to be or already is the next target for the Democrats in Washington? Or is this a whole lot of fuss about nothing? 1-800-423-8255. Raleigh, North Carolina, and Carl's joining us. Hi, Carl.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. What do you think?
Well, I'm kind of a independent type fellow, and I've been listening to this the talk that you got going on there about Tom DeLay. You know, all I got to say is he's sort of been the poster child for the Republican conservatives and, you know, the moral issues that they like to stand behind, et cetera, et cetera. And all I see is, smells like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, you know, and I don't know how they talk about it in Texas, but here in North Carolina, you know, I'd be calling my congressman and saying, hey, why don't you look into this guy? Smells a little bit like fish. And, you know, I noticed about a year ago that he did some kind of thing up there with the Ethics Committee where he reappointed some of the folks, most of them being his buddies. So I'm not so sure that they can even watch themselves up there. You know, sometimes when you feel like you're that close to the Lord, I guess you don't have to do what the rest of us have to do.
I want to just check this thing with the Ethics Committee because I know there was some rejiggering of the rules there. I read something. Rich Cohen, can you help me with this? I read something that said he'd sort of spearheaded a rewriting of the rules that said a congressional leader under indictment wouldn't have to step down from his position, but I may have that wrong.
Well, you know, you got it right, and that's actually, there's a couple of interesting points on that. Mr. DeLay, in November, right after the election, he and his allies made an effort, and they temporarily did change the rules of the Republican conference in the House so that a leader who was indicted would no longer have to step aside. But, in fact, there were some House Republicans publicly and some privately, but among the public members, Christopher Shays of Connecticut said at the time that 30 or 40 House Republicans opposed that change. And, in fact, when Republicans came back in January, Mr. DeLay asked for and the conference agreed to rescind the change. In other words, go back to the status quo in which an indicted member would be removed from office. And I'll make refer to a second point. Separately from all this, other Republicans, led by Speaker Dennis Hastert, made some changes in January at the start of the new Congress, made some changes in the ethics rules. They forced those through. The Republican conference as a whole supported them. That also was accompanied by changes in Republican members on the Ethics Committee. And now the Democrats are objecting to those rules changes. And so long as they object, it's difficult for the Ethics Committee to organize itself and conduct business.
So they're a little bit paralyzed right now.
Yes.
All right. Whit Ayers, just one response from you, if I can get it to the implied part of Carl's question, that here we have someone who puts himself up there as a very moral leader and therefore needs to be held to account on questions about his travel budget, questions about ethics, and questions about indicted aides. What do you think?
Well, I don't know that Tom DeLay has put himself up as a moral leader of the country or a paragon of rectitude. I think what he has done is promote some views and some positions that a lot of people who care about faith, who care about values issues, care deeply about. But I don't know that he's ever held himself up as a paragon of virtue.
All right, 1-800-423-8255 to Port Royal, South Carolina. And John is with us. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Well, I guess I'm listening to this, and I'm in South Carolina, not one of the most liberal places in the world, but the reaction I'm getting is maybe not along the lines that I'm hearing maybe from most of the folks on the show that's left or right or Republican, Democrat. I guess when I heard DeLay's comments about the judiciary, I mean, it really did send chills down my spine that, you know, here's a guy in this powerful position that has this attitude about, you know, one of the pillars of our democracy, and it was pretty directly stated. Didn't sound like, you know, much of a position to be taken by someone in that, in his position.
It was interesting. The words arrogant, out of control, unaccountable judiciary was awfully powerful language for a national leader, and clearly something of a warning shot about what the party's looking at with judicial nominations ahead of it. I want to go back to Lou DeBose in Texas on this one, and Lou, this, the criticism of the judiciary, the evil activist judges who have been marked by the Republican Party, how did the whole Schiavo thing play for the party and Tom DeLay in Texas?
Well, I want to go back to 1 minute for the Ethics Committee, though, because they have rejiggered the Ethics Committee. They've stacked the deck. They threw off three members who voted against to admonish Tom DeLay,
and they
stacked it with pro-DeLay members, including Doc Hastings, and as chair, and two members of the committee who are contributing to Tom DeLay's defense fund. Regarding Schiavo, Tom DeLay's been after federal judges for a long time. He's consistent on that. He has been a constant critic. He's talked about impeaching judges who vote the wrong way. And as your last caller said, that is kind of chilling. The Schiavo case, I think, if politics indeed is show business for ugly people, you don't want to be a star. And Tom DeLay has thrived on being living below working below the radar. Mm-hmm. He has now established a national visibility that I think is a liability to him and maybe a liability to the Republicans as they run next year with Democrats trying to tie Tom DeLay around. Around their neck as a stone to take the whole Republican conference out. I don't think Democrats can win the House that easily.
I saw a couple of comments from DeLay when he was talking to Rotarians in Sugar Land in the 22nd Congressional District, and he said, bring it on. You know, this stuff just makes me stronger. And so whether we're talking about the Ethics Committee or whether we're talking about whatever he says publicly about the judiciary, his perspective is this is not hurting him in Texas. Whit Ayers says this is a constituency that matters. These are his people. What difference does it make to them?
Well, I can see a centrist Democrat running in the 22nd district there's not three admonishments. In 99, Tom DeLay was reprimanded by the House Ethics Committee. You know, name a living congressman who's not in jail who's been admonished by the Ethics Committee, which is by tradition and for the past 10 years a moribund committee. It's done nothing except admonish Tom DeLay four times. So you take that. You take a $50,000 golf trip with money that came from an Indian tribe in Texas, $25,000, and $25,000 from another tribe, on the tab of these Indians, and he, Tom DeLay, took that trip to Scotland to play golf, $50,000 trip paid for by Indians, and you run on that, and you have four times admonished. The Wall Street Journal is attacking him, and you have the beginning of a negative campaign that I think would resonate anywhere in Texas.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. What are you hearing? What are you paying attention to? Let's take a call from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Charles is with us. Hi, Charles.
Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thanks for calling.
Well, I guess I fall into that percentage of the Americans who do know Tom DeLay and have an opinion. And my opinion, not so much with Tom DeLay, but with anyone. He seems to be one of these leaders that believes that because, the Republican Party is in the legislative branch and in the executive branch, that he can act without impunity. That doesn't jive with me. It doesn't resonate with me. And I think that these people need to be held accountable for their actions.
There are people, Charles, though, who look at the long view here and say, this is what happens. You know, the Democrats were in charge for so long, they turned all the rules to their advantage. Basically, what Tom DeLay is doing is readjusting it to his own perspective. Will you buy any of that?
No, because I'm a Democrat. I'm a centrist Democrat. And I would say that if the situation were different and the Democratic majority leader was behaving in such a way, I'd say, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take a bigger view. Yes, you are responsible to the people in your constituency, and I understand that, but when you get into the Senate or the Congress or you become the President of the United States, you've got to have a bigger view and be inclusive of all Americans, not just the ones that give you positive poll numbers.
Charles, I thank you for your call. 1-800-423-8255. Well, do you know Charles DeLay? Are you paying attention to what's going on inside the... do you know Tom DeLay? That was Charles on the phone there. Clearly, Tom DeLay is the subject of our conversation this hour, and we're interested in knowing whether or not you think what's going on in Washington inside the Beltway is discredit either to the party or to this person, or whether or not it is just a little bit of smoke blown up by the Democrats, and it's really not going to make a big difference to the Republican control in Washington. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, we're taking the temperature of the heat that is around Tom DeLay and whether or not that's the sort of thing that is going to cause him any difficulty in his role as House Majority Leader. Lou DuBose is with us. He is the author of a book about Tom DeLay called The Hammer. Rich Cohen, congressional correspondent for the National Journal, is also on board. And Whit Ayers, president of Ayers and McHenry Associates, a Republican polling firm based in Alexandria, Virginia, is also with us. Whit, let me start with you if I can. You are a numbers person, and I don't want to make anything out of a handful of calls, but I do hear in the tone of what people are saying a sort of, you know, how far can this guy go? Is this really a problem? And I'm interested in how you measure this. Is there going to come a point where Tom DeLay might in fact become a liability for the party?
Well, I think your callers tell you a whole lot more about the attitudes of the people who listen to The Connection than the attitudes of most voters in the country, and it certainly doesn't tell you anything about the attitudes of the House Republican Caucus, which is what really matters here. But I do think your last caller was talking about taking the broader view and looking beyond your narrow partisan interests, and I think what Tom DeLay said about federal judges, while people may not endorse the exact words he used, do reflect a broader view around the country about frustration with federal judges who just make stuff up out of thin air, who find in Massachusetts a constitutional right that gay marriage should be required by the Massachusetts legislature, or that child pornography should be protected free speech, or that under God should come out of the pledge because it's an establishment of religion.
But as bad as any of those decisions may appear to whoever is watching and paying attention, I get the impression that the Schiavo case also told us that people don't want the politicians stepping in there to say, no, we can do a better job.
You're right, Dick. And if somebody had asked a question, do you support or oppose the federal courts or the state courts getting involved in the Schiavo decision, they would probably have told you the same thing, because they want, most Americans want decisions like that made within the family in consultation with physicians and clergy. But the point is that it wasn't just the Schiavo case that created this emotion. It was built up over a number of years, over a number of decisions, where a lot of people are getting really frustrated with judges who create bizarre decisions, like child pornography should be protected as free speech, or make stuff up out of thin air. And I think Tom DeLay was reflecting the frustration of a whole lot of Americans when he said that, not just those who are right-wing Republicans.
And Rich Cohen, Whit Ayers quite rightly draws our attention back to the caucus, the people who put Tom DeLay in that position, keep him in that position, and work with him there. At what point does he become a liability? How do you measure that?
When he becomes a liability to House Republicans, when actions and political campaigns across the country make Tom DeLay an issue, and an issue, and he becomes an issue in individual contests that adversely affects those Republican candidates. So far, frankly, that hasn't happened. Democrats made some effort, somewhat ham-handed efforts, to make DeLay an issue in the campaign last fall, right after the Ethics Committee admonishments were issued. They pointed out all sorts of, the Democrats pointed out and attacked Republican congressmen and other candidates who received money from DeLay, and they thought, the Democrats thought this would be an opportunity. It didn't work then. Now they're Democrats are trying it again this cycle. They're going to have more time. They think they'll have more issues. But it's open to question whether the public will vote for their local congressman or against their congressman based on this majority leader from Texas.
Lou DuBose, you're a columnist for the Texas Observer as well as an author. Is it going to stick in Texas?
Well, Tom DeLay is very, you know, Texas is a Republican state, and Tom DeLay delivered six Republican congressmen by redrawing the state lines in the last election. you know, but there are a lot of news cycles lying ahead of us in which Tom DeLay's accumulated scandals are going to be, you know, part of the news. There were six stories and then five stories in a week in the Washington Post. The only good headline he got was Majority Leader treated for heart irregularity. Everything else was bad. Mm-hmm. He can't continue to be a bad story about to break and be an effective leader, political leader of the Republican House caucus. You've got Jack Abramoff and Mike Scanlon. Now, Mike Scanlon, Abramoff is
a long-time associate.
Yeah. Jack Abramoff is a long-time associate, fundraiser and supporter of Tom DeLay. Mike Scanlon is his former press aide who was paying off his college loans at age 30 when he left Tom's employment. It now appears that they bilked $81 million out of six Indian tribes. And there are very likely to be indictments. Senator John McCain is investigating him on how Senate Indian Affairs Committee. There are two federal grand juries in Washington looking at Tom DeLay Associates. Now, this is not DeLay himself, but Tom DeLay took $50,000 in money from these two Indian tribes, and they requested it for him to go play golf in Scotland. Then in Texas you have 32 count indictments against eight corporations and three Tom DeLay fundraisers. You have a lawyer standing up in open court three weeks ago in a civil trial, a month ago, and saying that Tom DeLay took a $25,000 corporate check, which is illegal under Texas law, from a Reliant lobbyist. Well, that Reliant lobbyist was Drew Maloney, Tom DeLay's former a staff member.
I want to stop you there, Lou, because we want to make space for our callers here. 1-800.
Okay, stop that rant.
423-8255. No, we get the message here. Chapel Hill, North Carolina. David's on the line. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to say that my wife's parents live in the 22nd District of Texas, and the thing about it and the thing that I don't hear your speakers commented on is that it's a really wealthy district, but it's also a very religious district. And
yeah.
It seems to me that it's probably going to be a Republican district for a long time, but the indictments or the threat of indictments or the ethical problems with Tom DeLay go to the heart of why many of these people support him. And I think it does make him very vulnerable to Republican or Democratic attack and does undermine his constituency in Texas.
Are you saying that when you have a very religious constituency, then people pay close attention to questions of ethics?
Well, it seems to me that the moral rhetoric and the moral basis of his political campaigns become undermined when people all around him are coming under indictment for financial impropriety, if he had an affair, that would probably seal the deal better, but it does seem to me that if he is running on a moral platform and then seems to be acquiring the taint of moral impropriety,
yeah,
or ethical impropriety, then that undercuts his legitimacy as a political leader in that district.
I want to revisit a bit of history here with Rich Cohen, if I can, because we go back to 1997, I think it is, when Tom DeLay was a part of a group of Republican congressmen who made these kinds of accusations against the then Speaker Newt Gingrich. And I'm wondering if people are looking at that, Rich, and saying, gee, I wonder if these kinds of questions, these kinds of concerns could lead to this background building of support for other people or questions about him inside the caucus.
There was, it's very interesting, as you point out, that Tom DeLay was part of what was then, in the summer of 1997, an attempted coup against the Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. That coup failed in the short term. Gingrich remained in office, but he was clearly weakened as a result, and following the 1998 election, Gingrich was forced to step aside, not because the results were bad for Republicans. So to some extent, DeLay played a role in bringing Tom DeLay down. I just want to add something to what the last caller said about DeLay's district in Texas, that Republican, pretty conservative religious district.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and people, I mean, we talk about a lot of numbers in this program. Maybe the most interesting number to me about Tom DeLay recently is that he won re-election in that district with only 55% of the vote. This is a congressman who's been elected now 11 times, who's accustomed to winning with 65-75% of the vote. And for him to come down to 55% against an opponent who made a fair amount of noise, named Richard Morrison, but Morrison didn't have a lot of national party support.
Uh-huh.
That 55% number, it's enough, obviously, to get Tom DeLay reelected, but I think it's a bit worrisome for him.
Let's go to Gloucester, Massachusetts, for our next call. Eileen's joining us. Hi, Eileen.
Hi. My comment is that, following on your last caller, I think that there's an opportunity for Democrats, if not to unseat DeLay in his own district, to use him as a national symbol to help Democratic candidates in other districts by tying all Republicans to him, as, you know, it was successfully done with tying all Republicans to Newt Gingrich once he lost his glow. And I think in particular, the comments about the judiciary are just absolutely shocking. You would never hear of a judge saying, we've got to get rid of this president, or having a judge say that, you know, somebody on the Supreme Court saying that, you know, the legislative leaders are completely outrageous and ought to be, you know, mm-hmm. taken out of office. But
well, shocking maybe in Gloucester, Eileen, but Witt was saying not shocking to people in many other parts of the country.
Well, you know, I'm not sure about that, because I'm not sure that people are really thinking about it. First of all, your caller from your person from Virginia, he's a public relations person.
He's a pollster with a Republican polling firm. His name is Whit Ayers. You want to talk to him directly? He's on the line. You go ahead.
Well, Mr. Ayers, it wasn't a federal judge in Massachusetts. It was the state Supreme Court in Massachusetts. So, you know, when you lump all judges together like that, I have to wonder how good your research is. There's a vast difference between federal judges and state judges, and that's one of the basis of our judiciary system and our federal system. And
of course there is.
Seem to know that.
I would like to see somewhere in the Massachusetts Constitution or Massachusetts law that where elected officials have said anything about gay marriage being legal before that court case. The point I was making is that having judges make stuff up out of thin air, be they state judges or federal judges, or having judges make bizarre rulings like the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance create an establishment of religion that is unconstitutional, angers a lot of people, not just conservative Republicans, but a lot of people around the country. And I think the emotion generated by those decisions, like child pornography is protected free speech.
Wait, I'm wondering if I can...
what Tom DeLay was reflecting in the emotion of his statement.
So bring me, Whit, to the first part of what Eileen was saying, that this may be an opportunity for Democrats to marshal their forces around someone. Has Tom DeLay given them that figure?
Tom DeLay does not yet have the visibility nationally. He's not the Speaker of the House. Only about half of Americans have an opinion about him. So he is not yet at the level of visibility that you can run a national campaign against him. Now, who knows what's going to happen over the course of the next month or two or the next year. But at this point, he doesn't have the sort of national image that can sustain a national campaign run against him.
Let's hear from Evelyn, who's joining us now on the line. Evelyn, you're from the 22nd District in Texas, is that right?
Yes, I am.
And where are you calling from? Are you calling from there right now?
Yes, I am. I'm calling from Galveston.
And what do you think?
Well, you know, we just recently got Tom DeLay. Actually, he had been my congressman when I lived in Brazoria County. And I was hopeful when I moved to Galveston County that I wouldn't keep him. But I think something the national people need to keep an eye on is to look at the district and how it was redistricted when they did this a couple of years ago. And look at how he took in his district now. It's just like a little finger that takes in all the NASA area. And the belief down here is that that was done so he could, raise money from all the NASA contractors.
Yeah.
And he hasn't always been quite as supportive you know, in the past as he was is now.
I'm assuming you did not vote for him in the last election, Evelyn?
Yeah, I never voted for him.
And is it all about redistricting, or is there something else about this man that you don't?
It's just him. His arrogance is really beyond control, and I think in the end, his arrogance is what will get him.
And do you think that there are other people in Sugar Land who would agree with you now? I mean, we talked earlier about him getting only 55% in the last election. Is he in trouble?
Well, Sugarland is quite different from the area that he redistricted. He may have ended up hurting himself by taking in the parts of Galveston County. He did it to split up Galveston County, but there's quite a bit of African-American and worker, blue-collar people that he took in the Galveston County area, and that's why Richard Morrison was able to do well in Galveston County.
Let me go back to Rich Cohen in Washington here. I mean, the redistricting story is one that is with Tom DeLay, but it's a complicated story, and it doesn't necessarily have those kinds of national echoes. Rich, what are you watching for this week as Congress comes back? Rich, are you there? No, look like we've lost that line. Lou DeBose, I want you to help me out on this one. Tom DeLay is back in Washington. Do you think he's a worried man?
I think he goes back a worried man, despite the bravado. I think a lot depends. Tom DeLay was fortunate and he said, "God sent us Terry Schiavo," in a rather cynical speech that would never have been released were it not for someone that taped it at a conservative Republican group. But he's had Terry Schiavo, and he's had the Pope that's kept him off the death of the Pope that's kept him off the front page. But he goes back to a Congress that has no rules committee because it's a 5-5 split. It's the only equally divided committee. The Democrats refuse to go along with rules that really that will require a majority of the committee to vote in order to begin an investigation. And never before in the history of the committee. So he goes back to that. The next couple of news cycles, I think, are a big difference. We'll see what the difference is.
Your point is that there's just not enough momentum at this point for Democrats to get excited about this.
Correct.
1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us on the program. I thank you for being with us. Lou DeBose, columnist for the Texas Observer, Whit Ayers, Republican pollster Richard Cohen, congressional correspondent for the National Journal, and earlier we talked with Morton Blackwell, member of the Republican National Committee from Virginia. Our program is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, Doug Sugarts, and Mary Stack. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.